Welcome back, everybody, and welcome if you're just joining us. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Folks, it is Free Ticket Friday, so text in the word to win via the Civic Media app, and you will be entered to win four club-level tickets to the Brewers versus the San Francisco Giants on August 23rd. That's Saturday. It's a 6:10 game, and it is the Bob Uecker Golf Umbrella Giveaway Day. I know I don't want to miss it. I'm going to make every effort to be there. So if you want to be there with me and all the other Brewers fans for this incredible run that they're having, you're going to want to text in the word HOME. That's H-O-M-E, HOME. Right now, you got to get it in before 5 p.m. via the Civic Media app to be entered to win. We've got Professor Lowell Barrington of Marquette University. He's a political scientist and a historian. We're talking about what's going on right now as we speak. Donald Trump meeting with Vladimir Putin in Anchorage, Alaska, at a base just outside of Anchorage. Donald Trump joined by, and we were just mentioning this before we went to break, Donald Trump joined by Secretary of State Marco Rubio and his special envoy, Steve Witkoff. Putin in the room with Trump, joined by Sergey Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, as well as Yuri Ushakov. And Professor Barrington, we were talking during the break about comparing the relative heft of the three men in the room on behalf of Russia to the resume heft of the three men in the room for the United States. And I think it's fair to say that just pound for pound, if you will, mixing some metaphors here, we're a bit outmatched in terms of experience in these sorts of diplomatic matters and intelligence matters. Is that a fair statement, Professor?
Well, I think it is, in that if you look at the experience of the three people, I mean, Putin was a KGB officer. He studied in other countries, lived in other countries, really got to kind of know the West in a serious way. And he's been president of Russia for 25 years. I mean, so that alone. But then you put a long time foreign minister, Lavrov, and then also Ushakov was the Russian ambassador, even during the Soviet period, Soviet ambassador, but then Russian ambassador to the United States. So he knows the U.S. really well, knows foreign policy really well. So it is, even though it's a kind of three-on-three instead of one-on-one, it is a quite, from an experience standpoint, formidable, you know, team on the Russian side.
Yeah, that is a remarkable fact about these negotiations in and of itself. What do you think, you know, if you're looking at the realm of possible outcomes, Professor, what do you think is doable in this meeting, given that the president of Ukraine, President Zelensky, isn't there, not in the room? What do you make of that? How do you broker a peace if one side of the war isn't involved in the discussion?
Right. Well, I mean, there are situations in which in arbitration, I guess the arbitrator meets with one side separately and then meets with the other side. I don't know when we're going to meet with Zelensky in the same way we're meeting with Putin here. But there, you know, it is ultimately at the end of the day, Ukraine has to be involved in these discussions. And I would argue Europe has to be involved in these discussions. I think one time we talked previously, I talked about this great statement from a European official about how people keep talking about whether Europe's going to be brought to the table in these, and at some point Europe just needs to make its own table, right? And I think that is something that we need to keep in mind, that Europe sees itself as snubbed here as much as Zelensky sees himself snubbed by this event as well. So first of all, I mean, when you're negotiating with only one side, there is sort of in some ways only so much you can do, because what you bring back to the other side still has to then be negotiated with them. But I would also say it's clear that even Trump himself realizes that the outcome of this is not going to be a breakthrough where, you know, Putin's going to make all these concessions and there's going to be an immediate ceasefire and Zelensky will be happy to agree, right? That it went from we're going to get a ceasefire out of this to, well, this might set the table for a second meeting, right? Like that's kind of the new goal, it sounds like, out of these. So I don't think even the U.S. side expects that there will likely be a big breakthrough. I actually think what we should be watching for in the follow-up meetings, there's some kind of extended delegation meetings going on. I think what we're most likely to get from real decisions here are some U.S.-Russia economic agreements coming out of this, as much as we're going to get anything about the Ukraine-Russia war.
Mm. And is that really the actual objective here? Just this week in the Washington Post, Vladimir Kara-Murza, one of Russia's best known and still living Putin opponents and dissidents, wrote this: in the most important sense, Putin got everything he wanted before he even set foot on Alaskan soil. The invitation itself was the prize. Putin is an illegitimate usurper who has long overstayed constitutional term limits. He's an indicted war criminal with an arrest warrant from the International Criminal Court. He's a dictator who, to quote Marco Rubio's own words, manipulated the electoral system to maintain his illegitimate grip on power. He's imprisoned and murdered political opponents, and yet with just one phone call from the American president, Putin has been readmitted as a bona fide participant in the international community and is emboldened to make his ever-escalating demands. What are the long-term implications of this summit, Professor?
Again, I think there is an argument that if we don't get anything out of this in a serious way in terms of the Ukraine-Russia conflict, it does even kind of further weaken in some ways Trump's standing globally and the U.S. standing globally, because we did do all those things, Kara-Murza said. And by the way, I was going to mention to you, I'm glad he said it in that statement, Putin is in fact an indicted war criminal. And this is a decision the U.S. has made to not enforce warrants, for example, from the International Criminal Court, or any kind of situation like that, where in some countries, if Putin set foot on the soil, he would actually be turned over.
He'd be arrested.
Right? We do not follow that. And instead, in fact, have kind of elevated him, again, on par with Trump, as we've talked about, with everything that went on when they both landed and things like that today.
Yeah, B-2 bomber flyover. We could spend an entire show talking about the U.S.'s very bizarre relationship with the International Criminal Court. Thank you so much, Professor Lowell Barrington of Marquette University. When I come back, we discuss MMSD's efforts to save Milwaukee.